This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Kia ora everyone and welcome back to Equal Agenda. This is your host Molly.
And I'm Isabel.
And today we are here with a very special guest. This is Annette from Insight Endometriosis. She's here to chat with us about all things to do with like gender bias in the healthcare system. And she has a special interest in endometriosis. So it'd be really cool to hear about her thoughts on all of these topics.
Well, look, thanks very much for the warm welcome.
So Annette, would you like to take it away, introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your mahi?
Yeah, sure. So, as Molly said, I'm from Inside Endometriosis. So we're a local charity. We've been around since 1999, providing support and information for everyone impacted by endometriosis. And that can look like one-on-one support. It can look like raising awareness. So, yeah, quite a broad way of ways that we work alongside people to try and improve outcomes.
Perfect. And for anyone listening who might not know about the background of endometriosis, could you give us just a simple definition of what it means to you?
Yeah, it's actually a really complicated topic. So to keep it really simple, it's a condition that affects one in seven women, teenage girls, and the gender diverse. And most common symptom would be pain at time of periods, but it's also New Zealand's leading cause of fertility problems, and I think a lot of people should know a bit about it just for that reason alone. And medically, it's where tissue that resembles the uterine lining is found in other places in the body, but I don't think we need to get into too much technical detail. I think it's more the impacts and those wider issues that we'll be focusing on today.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Annette. So could you tell us a little bit about what motivated you to work in the healthcare space and what drew you to specialise in endometriosis?
It was interesting when you sent that question through because I'm thinking, because there's usually people that are drawn to this sort of area who have personal connection, and that's the case for me. So I have endometriosis. I was diagnosed with it in my 30s. But I'm sure I had it as a teenager, and there's a lot of really missed opportunities for me to have been diagnosed at a much younger age. And I think things have improved. I've definitely seen an improvement over the years, but there are still a lot of missed opportunities. And so that's definitely what drew me towards this particular area, because I can see an opportunity to change outcomes for people who are going through similar things to me, and maybe we can, you know, get people diagnosed younger.
Did you find out about your own diagnosis before you were drawn into this specialty area of your work? Or
Yeah, definitely. And so for me, it was around fertility problems. But I had a lot of pain as a teenager and in my younger years as well. And it wasn't, though, until I had fertility problems that it was really investigated and explored. And I look back now and I think, well, if I'd heard of endometriosis, because no one had even said the term to me before or hinted at it, and if I'd been introduced to that term much younger, I might have made some different choices. And I think being aware of things in itself, whether you're diagnosed or not, just the awareness, I think, makes a big difference. And so I look back and think I might not have had that fertility problem. But when I was diagnosed, I literally said, endo what? I'd not have heard of endometriosis before. Nobody had introduced me to that topic. And I think we're a bit further ahead now.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, because I mean, I've been quite familiar with the term of endometriosis, like PCOS, all of the like reproductive health issues, even though I've been really lucky never to experience anything like that myself. So I feel like that's a good sign, at least, that the awareness is, you know, more accessible to like the younger generation, and we're learning about these things earlier on. So
exactly. I think that makes a big difference.
Yes, 100%.
It's interesting that you were only diagnosed in your 30s, because I feel like even for us kind of growing up, sex ed or like health education in school is so focused kind of on fertility or like pregnancy prevention, and it's not addressing like hormonal issues that women, quite a few women, will face in their lives. And so, yeah, so many women only find out so much later on in life than they probably should have.
To change the subject slightly, how do you think that gender affects the way that people are diagnosed or treated in Aotearoa?
Isn't it interesting that endometriosis is one of the few conditions which is highly gendered? You think of other really common conditions, asthma, diabetes, you know, all of those things, they tend to cross across a lot of different demographics, but endometriosis is probably unique in being such a common condition, but really affecting those, you know, women or AFAB population, and as a result, all the gender biases that everybody know are prevalent in the health system has kind of a multiplier impact on the demographic that's affected by it. And you know, it's not that long that the medical professions, when they did various research projects and so on, only really had men involved, and it was apparently to save women from, you know, having to go through research, and you know, women are not small men. For every condition and every protocol, the gender should be taken into account. But when you look at endometriosis, the diagnostic rates are incredibly low. And a lot of it comes down to resourcing. It's not a prioritised condition. So rather than necessarily best practice, I think we're seeing a lot of resource limitations impacting. And until it's prioritised, I can't see outcomes through the medical profession changing.
I think, like, something that you brought up about how women were not the, like, subject of these, like, testings and to find out, you know, more about these conditions. And I think that has had more of an impact on, like, medical progression than we kind of stopped to consider, you know? Yeah, I just think the fact that we are kind of like at a disadvantage now because of the previous years when medicine has just been experimented by men and for men, and how complex and different our bodies are, and that hasn't been taken into account.
We've got a long way to go to catch up. You know, endometriosis as a studied health condition is kind of like diabetes was 50, 60, 70 years ago. And, you know, we've got a long way to go just to even understand what causes it. And you can't cure something, and it's difficult to treat something if you don't even understand what causes it.
Yeah, it's almost one of those things that you see in the healthcare system of when something isn't physical or something can't be seen from the outside, it's almost taken less seriously. And it kind of, like, you know, relates. I'm studying psychology, and so, like, mental health is also something that's not visible from the outside, and so I feel like there's people just trying to catch up now with research, and same for internal reproductive health issues.
Absolutely. And it's interesting you bring the psychology into things as well. So, you know, there was a study done in New Zealand not so long ago comparing the younger population of people with bowel cancer. And so they compared the outcomes for younger men and younger women, and they found that a lot of the symptoms that women were having, which were identical to men's, were dismissed and chalked up to being some kind of psychological problem, like, this is physiology. And so the diagnostic delays they had weren't just related to age, but also to gender, for something that isn't considered a gendered condition. And the stories that the women were telling were passed on to the men, and the men were just going, but that's extraordinary. Why, you know, I went to my GP and he listened and he ordered these tests. Women went along and they were, you know, suggested counselling or other things. I just find it fascinating.
Have you, like, noticed that that's a common theme, that doctors, like, don't take women's reproductive health seriously because they just consider other factors first before jumping to general, you know, like, reproductive health?
That's certainly the feedback that we get from a lot of lived experience. So I wouldn't say it's across the board with all GPs, but we are currently doing a study on GPs right now to try and find out what the diagnostic delays are at that level. And there they're just simply not expecting to see the number of patients. So it's weird because they can probably identify 1 in 10, you know, that sort of a level, and yet they might only expect to see 2 patients a year. And a lot of the patients are saying that their symptoms are minimised. Or when it comes to things like fertility, generally speaking, that's taken quite seriously. But the younger the demographic, the less interest there is in fertility issues, and the less GPs perhaps are, you know, listening out for the symptoms of endometriosis and connecting it.
I think it says a lot about how, when it comes to fertility, that's when they start taking things seriously. Because to me, that highlights that as soon as the issue involves like wider implications, then they start taking the woman seriously. But before that, when it's just the woman's personal issues, they're like, oh, you know, your issues aren't that serious, or downgrading her feelings and emotions on the topic. So it says a lot. In your opinion, what are the most important changes needed in our healthcare system to better serve people affected by endometriosis or gendered healthcare conditions?
That's such a huge topic, isn't it? we could talk 28 minutes just on that topic. Yeah. I mean, we put in a submission to the Health Committee in 2023, and in that submission, it was around the women's health strategy. It's incredible we're in 2025 and there hadn't been a women's health strategy developed. And, you know, there's a lot of changes that we were suggesting in there. So I guess the big thing is that we need a strategy. There isn't really even a consensus document on what the best treatments are for endometriosis. So instead, things seem to be, you know, there's only about 20-something gynaecologists in all of New Zealand in public practice who specialise in what's called stage 4 endometriosis. So we need a whole lot of workforce development. So we need to, you know, figure out a plan. You know, how are we going to get there in the longer term? We need better diagnostics, and certainly the Australian model, there's a lot of money and research being done there to improve diagnostic protocols. And so it'd be good to import some of that into New Zealand. So there's a whole lot of different aspects at different levels, whether it's working primary care through to tertiary care, and support, I think, how to navigate the health system. A lot of it now is around self-advocacy. That's a lot of what we teach, particularly the younger demographic, is just how to navigate the health system and how to advocate for yourself so you get what you want. And that cuts across everything. I mean, that cuts across life. Mm. It's not just about endometriosis care, but making sure that everybody understands how to get what they want. So that's down to an individual level at that point. There are so many interventions needed. You know, our GP project could help improve that. We're also starting to work with schools more. So across the board, a lot of change is needed.
Yeah, 100%. I've noticed that such a key theme to like almost every solution is having that knowledge and education that then allows you to then put a plan in place and then start actioning that plan. So I think like everything that you were saying about looking at what other countries are doing and then following in their footsteps, and depending on what they're doing that's good or bad, or just really finding that knowledge in other places and translating it into what we can do.
Absolutely. A lot of it is about building confidence in individuals. And, you know, if you've been ignored by society with your issues, I mean, people don't casually drop endometriosis into conversations, I found. I know that's surprising, but, you know, it's not always talked about. And so if you've been living with a condition for a long time, it's easy to get your confidence knocked. And so what we've found is learning how to be assertive and finding out what's available, having a plan, even just having a plan for yourself, can improve your confidence and, you know, make you feel like you can make some progress, even though nothing's actually changed.
I also feel like, going back to the whole, like, you know, working in grassroots organisations or like charities, is having more funding or more resourcing towards these organisations who are helping women with these issues specifically. Because, say, I don't know, you have a lack of trust or trauma from going to the healthcare system, or your GP doesn't understand you as well as they should. And so just having these spaces that women can come to where they feel heard and understood would make such a difference in feeling seen in your endometriosis?
Absolutely. A lot of it's just about validation, and it's about, you know, oh, I understand. We can have people turning up to support groups, and they, you know, they might turn up quite timid and like, don't really know. And after a while, it's, oh, you get it, you know, you just get it. Mm. I can sit here and I can talk and I can share. And sometimes it's such an isolating condition, and yet it affects one in seven. But yeah, that whole level of support, feeling like someone's walking alongside you, that makes a big difference to people as well. So some people just want information, others want support, and just want to be able to share and hear from other people's experience. And that's just as valid as the medical side of things, probably more so for a lot.
100%, because I feel like mental health is so important, and it's only just become like destigmatized to really like openly talk about your mental health. And I'm sure for some of these women, like, what a relief it would be to finally be validated in your pain that you've been feeling and be told, you know, it's not something that you've just been making up or over dramatizing. Like, it is a genuine condition, and you know, it just gives you that hope to finding the help that you need as well, and gives you like a basis for the plan that we were talking about earlier. Now at least you have a diagnosis, so then you can form a plan. What gives you hope for the future when it comes to progression for people with endometriosis and those experiencing gender bias from the healthcare system?
Yeah, you threw me that question and I went, oh, that's a curly one, isn't it? I guess it's just my own lived experience, because I have seen so much change happen over the years. It is really encouraging now to have contact primarily from a younger demographic, and I think that's you know, such an important change to have seen. I think it's also important that we are seeing internationally some change happening, particularly in Australia, and there are a lot of relationships in the health system with Australia, so you have to think that they might generate a whole lot of really useful research that we can then take advantage of here. And we are starting to see that. So ultrasound protocols, for instance, we need better ultrasound machines, we need more training, but those are relatively simple things to do. So I think we will see good change, but I think we're coming off such a low base. Any improvement, I think, would be really fantastic. You have to be optimistic that things will improve in the longer term. One project that we've managed to secure some funding for is being able to go into schools and start to develop some programs within schools. So the only way to change outcomes is to reach a younger demographic. And now I think we've reached a point where that younger demographic are receptive to hearing.
If you were speaking directly to a woman who maybe suspects that they might have endometriosis but is maybe like unaware, what are the key signs that you would tell her to look out for, and like what knowledge would you share with her that you feel is most important surrounding endometriosis?
I first of all would validate any symptoms that they had, and would talk a lot about these symptoms. But in terms of getting them some support, and I'll talk about the symptoms in a minute, in terms of getting them some support would be around keeping a symptom diary, so recording what treatments they're trying and how they're working for them. And the idea around that is both for their own knowledge, but also to build a case so that when they want to go to see a health professional, they've got all that evidence, their own personal story. Because it's really hard when you sit back in a gynae's office, you know, tell me about your pain symptoms. If you have it all documented, you can present it in a short space of time. So you've got a case to present. And that's, when you're a gynaecologist, you've got limited time. Having that synopsis is really valuable. So things to look out for would be pain is what it's obviously world famous for. fertility issues, if that's important to you as well. But pain can come in all sorts of different places and types. So typically endometriosis starts with pain at time of period. So it could be pain in your lower back. It could be, you know, pain when you go to the toilet. It's not necessarily what we would call period pain necessarily. And that pain could also be inside the uterus, so it can be a spasmy kind of a pain. It can be a dull ache kind of a pain. Often it can be a level of debilitating, so it could mean that you go to bed with a hot water bottle, or you can't go to school, or it's interfering with your work. But not always. And some people don't actually have pain as a symptom, so for them, they're looking at other symptoms. So chronic fatigue is another issue. And endometriosis can grow anywhere in the body, so it can be bowel, bladder, heart, lungs, diaphragm, and those are all going to cause different symptoms. But typically it starts as being cyclical pain of some description somewhere in the body, and the worst case is when it becomes chronic debilitating pain, when it's left too long, and you then have a central nervous system that's, you know, hyperstimulated, and you're in constant chronic pain. So you end up with a pain condition on top of endometriosis and fertility problems. Wow. You don't want to go down that path. You want to diagnose earlier.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. Do you have any other additional comments, anything that is maybe important to discuss, do you feel, or do you feel like we've covered all the bases?
Just raising awareness, I think, is really valuable. The more people that know about endometriosis and don't dismiss it, the better for everyone who's got endometriosis, and raising awareness in the wider population, I think. You know, when we talk more about prostate cancer than we talk about endometriosis, I think. Doesn't that do a terrible disservice to all the people who have endometriosis or are impacted by it? And I think it affects society more widely. It affects employers, it affects places of study, it affects things at so many different levels. So I think it's important that everybody knows something about endometriosis and its impacts as well.
I think going back to the hopes for the future is just the fact that we're like having these open conversations about women's health issues and reproductive issues kind of shows how far we've come in society. You know, like back in the day, people wouldn't even be talking about these things, and even periods like would just be a hidden thing that you wouldn't share with anyone. And now that we're more women are able to connect and talk with each other about their cycles is just like really good progress, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's really, really encouraging, and it's definitely been a trend, I guess. One aspect to it, though, is, you know, New Zealand's multicultural, and there are a lot of cultures in New Zealand that don't openly discuss menstruation and period pain and fertility and all these things too. So it's definitely reaching out for that, you know, the diversity to make sure that everybody gets to have change. Yeah, more we talk about it, more widely, the better.
Thank you so much to Annette for joining us on this episode. And thank you guys for also listening. We'll see you on the next one.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.